or before buying or selling any of the funds discussed on our show today, do your homework or work with a trained advisor to make sure the investment meets your individual circumstances and financial objectives. Also, keep in mind that the performance numbers we discuss today would not necessarily be the performance achieved by a Financial Engines client, and the mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. You can visit www.financialengines.com for more information.
Welcome to Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines, ranked America's largest independent registered investment advisor by Investment News. Every week, we help you make sense of your investments, retirement, Social Security, and much, much more. Plus, we answer your calls and emails. And now, hosts Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
With this being Memorial Day weekend, hopefully you've downshifted a little from your normal weekend pace.
Did you just say downshift?
I did. We're in Indianapolis, the home of the Indy 500.
500 this weekend.
I'm Bob Richards along with Andy Smith.
Hello.
So glad you're here on Investing Sense with us. And by the way, throughout the entire show, we are here to help you with your investing and your retirement goals at 888-833-8637. Or email your questions to askandy@investingsense.com. And Andy and I do the show here in Indianapolis, and this weekend, that's what it's all about.
Big month here in Indianapolis. So everywhere you go, you see the checkered flags, and there's just a lot going on. Any of you guys doing anything over the weekend?
Yep, lots of plans around the Indy 500.
Listening to the race on the radio, kind of do some yard work. But so I always find it kind of interesting. You know, you hear the cars, and you see all the accidents. I guess I look at a little bit more of the mechanics of everything in terms of, all right, you just crashed a car or you have kind of some injuries. Who's paying for all that, right? So from an insurance perspective, did you know that half of the drivers in Indianapolis, in the Indianapolis 500, have one thing in common? I set you up for this. You got to know what this is.
I don't know.
They all have the same agent for life insurance.
That's interesting. I never would have guessed that.
Yeah. So there's, you know, big incentive to win the race. It's not cheap to be a driver, right? So they get these, you know, million-dollar life insurance policies. The IndyCar driver pays about $8,000 a year for the policy. So, I mean, this is pretty, you know, this is pretty expensive stuff. So, you know, we got fast lifestyles here in the Indianapolis 500. Speaking of fast lifestyles, you cannot stop talking about the Madoff movie.
Oh,
that
yeah.
You watched.
Yeah, I did. I caught the premiere. It's the HBO movie. It's called Wizard of Lies. It's the Bernie Madoff story.
I stayed up too late watching it. Just fascinated. I mean, it's the biggest example of, you know, you have to do your due diligence here. There's $60 billion just vanish. So, I don't know. De Niro was great. Michelle Pfeiffer. I had to look her up because I couldn't recognize her. I mean, it was just fascinating stuff.
I thought De Niro, he's played a lot of bad guys and mafia characters, but in this movie portraying Bernie Madoff, it was just chilling. And what really made it scary, although this is not a horror movie, is how plausible the scam was. Madoff made it feel like it was an honor if he just took your money. And yeah, here's an example of how he did it. Just listen to this scene from the movie. It's chilling.
I went in. I am talking about giving you $100 million.
That's not going to do it.
150.
Love to help you, but I can't.
175.
I wish I could. I'm just thinking of it.
No, 275.
$300 million.
How far do we got to go?
If you go above four, we might have something.
I can do that.
That was Robert De Niro playing Bernie Madoff in the HBO movie Wizard of Lies. And, I mentioned this before, Andy, that the scariest part about the whole story is how easy it was to fool really smart people. And recently, we were talking with John Bunch. John is the president of Financial Engines Advisors. And he was talking about this, and the fascinating thing that he shared was his firsthand account of the Madoff story. Here's John.
So this one really hits home to me. I was working in New York City on Wall Street in 2008 when this actually went down. But more importantly, I had a very good friend who had money with Bernie Madoff. And to this day, this friend hasn't even, I knew that he had money with Bernie Madoff through a series of friends, but hasn't admitted to me that he had the money. And I think part of it is he's embarrassed. Because if you think about this, a lot of times when we talk about financial scams, it's with people that aren't financially literate, right? The people that are, whether they're elderly or just kind of normal, everyday working Americans that don't understand the system. A lot of Bernie's clients were people of major influence, $100, $200, $300 million. And honestly, when you kind of step back and look at it, there are a ton of red flags. First one's pretty simple. If you have the same rate of return or close to the same rate of return, and it's never a negative return over a series of market cycles, that's a problem. I don't know a single investor that has ever been able to do that. And so I think that's red flag number one. Red flag number two, and we've talked a lot about this, Andy, is, you know, when you meet someone and you're connected back to kind of your faith or a church, you tend to kind of put your guard down because you feel like people have the same level of values as you. And I think this was another issue with the Madoff case. And then I think the third one is when you get a return that's above market average, you just want to believe it's true, right? That just feels good that you're beating the markets and you're in a great investment and everyone around you is successful. And so why in the world or how could this ever be wrong? And I think those three lessons, those are pretty big red flags.
That was John Bunch, the president of Financial Engines Advisors, talking about his memory of the Bernie Madoff scandal. John had a lot more to say about that, and we'd love for you to go and listen to our full conversation with John at investingsense.com. So, Andy, John went through some of those red flags. What were some other red flags that were a part of this entire scandal?
So one thing, stood out to me was that Madoff just wouldn't reveal his strategy, right? Said it was proprietary, didn't want to reveal the quote-unquote secret sauce. Well, come to find out through the trial, it was a simple strategy. I mean, he just used collars. Collars are pretty difficult, though, to understand because you buy stock, you sell what's called a call option, which is basically the ability to buy assets at a certain price. But since he's selling it, he's selling somebody the chance to, you know, for them to buy the assets at a certain price. So you buy the stock, you sell a call option, and then you buy a put. Well, that's just the ability to sell the assets at a certain price. So all of these things together kind of collar the particular position. There's nothing proprietary about it. The scammy part is that collars typically are used to hedge large stock positions. It is highly improbable for, you know, these consistent returns of 11 to 12% per year. All somebody had to do was figure out what that was.
So if you're listening to the show and you're thinking, if those people can get scammed like that, how do I protect myself, my investments, and my retirement plans? Well, Andy ran through some of those red flags, and we'd love to give you a second opinion. 888-833-8637 is our phone number. Ask Andy at investingsense.com, the email. And Andy, Jeff in Ohio has emailed his question, and it's about structured notes. And Jeff writes, we have $3 million to invest. Our current advisor suggests that we put 20% into a structured note, which is pegged to the S&P 500. The note is unsecured, pays three times the increase in the S&P 500, called at 25%, or if the index falls, we absorb the loss of principal. Andy, what is your opinion on such an investment?
And what was this fine gentleman's name?
Jeff.
Jeff, I want you to run and do not walk away from this investment. I know that we're up against a break here, but these are bad news. The only reason that the company offers structured notes is that it provides cheaper capital. And what that means is that if you buy the note, you're going to get a lower expected return. Try to get that in. We'll talk about that here after the break.
Save those thoughts, because coming up in just a few moments, Andy will continue his thoughts about Jeff's question concerning structured notes. And we would love to help you. Ask Andy at investingsense.com is our email address, 888-833-8637. The phone number to call us here on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Andy's a certified financial planner who's worked with investors for over 15 years and featured in the Wall Street Journal, Fox Business, and NBC News. That's some major street cred. If you want to put Andy's expertise to the test, email him at askandy@investingsense.com. With over 20 years of providing personalized financial advice, we serve over 140 companies on the Fortune 500. Learn more at investingsense.com. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
Before the break, Andy began to answer Jeff's email question and couldn't get to everything other than run, don't walk. So, Andy, let me remind you again, Jeff's question. He has $3 million to invest. His current advisor is suggesting that he put 20% into a structured note. So I will pick up for your comments after the Jeff, run, don't walk from this investment.
All right. So Wall Street advertises these structured notes in that you get to benefit from any rise in the stock market while getting protection against the downside. The thing is, these structured notes are very complex. Very few people understand how they're going to perform relative to just investing directly in the markets, right? These structured notes, they're essentially an IOU from an investment bank, and they're created using derivatives. The only benefit to structured notes is that you get to customize payouts and exposures. Well, there's some disadvantages too. Credit risk, so the bank could forfeit on the debt, lack of liquidity, pricing is pretty questionable. Bottom line, these are a great thing for a company to sell you, but they're not a great thing for you to own. The advisor isn't telling you about caps on the upside that are likely part of the note. They're not telling you that you could be losing out on dividends. You know, the best way to make money on these is to buy them from people who are sorry that they bought them in the first place. But, you know, whatever perceived protection that they're selling you, the costs for that far outweigh any sort of, you know, investing benefits here.
Jeff, so glad you emailed. Hope that second opinion helps. And that's what we're here to do for everyone, a second opinion. Call us with your questions, 888-833-8637. Email is askandy@investingsense.com. And Thomas is calling from Atlanta today. Thomas, how can we help you?
Me and my wife, her grandmother passed away. So she had her own financial advisor. We don't. We just have, like, regular, you know, you could say she's a teacher, so she has that fund. And I don't really have a 401k because I just finished school. We're really going to come into about $180,000, $190,000. And after I'm going to pay the school loans off and a credit card off, we'll have a little over $100,000 left in cash. But it's going to come to us in the form of a beneficiary IRA is what her investment person is telling us. So I was just curious, do you leave it in there or don't you? Because I'm really looking to see what you guys say and then find a fiduciary around here and make sure that they line, you know, I know if they line up with what you guys said, then of course we could go into more detail with them about where to exactly put things. But I just wanted to touch base with y'all to see what you would say we should start with.
Sure. So it cannot come out. You do not want this thing to leave the inherited IRA. And I'm sorry, is this is your wife as the beneficiary or are you the beneficiary?
Yes, she is.
Okay. So she will not want to do anything to take it out of the inherited IRA. She wants to leave it in there, but she'll have to take out what's called a required minimum distribution based on her life expectancy for the rest of her life. But that's okay because she's going to have this huge amount of money growing for her tax deferred for the rest of her life. So make sure that nobody ever gets you to pull it out or, you know, just write yourself a check or, you know, pay taxes on it because you don't have to do that. Make sure that nobody tries to sell you an annuity, which is another tax-deferred investment inside this tax-deferred account. No reason to have that double layer of tax optimization. But you're thinking along the right lines, right? You know, you want somebody who's going to be talking with you and doing things and suggesting things that are best for you and your wife rather than what's good for him. Because of your ages, because of how much time you have in the market, they'll probably be talking with you about growth strategies and investment strategies. Hopefully they take you through the retirement planning process like we would. So what we do is we give you a sense of, look, this is your goal. This is what you're trying to do X years down the line. These are the potential income numbers. These are the potential debt numbers. What other needs or wants or wishes do we have to account for? But then we kind of generate this list of instructions that say, all right, for you to get from here, from point A to point B, you need to save a little bit more. You need to spend a little bit less. You need to change the allocation like this. Let's take care of the debt by this particular date. Let's make sure that you have this amount in emergency savings, kind of all down the line. So when you talk to people, make sure that they're not just trying to sell you an investment product. Make sure that they're, you know, a fiduciary and not just trying to, you know, get you out the door as quickly as possible after making a commission. You want to go through that retirement planning process. And if after talking to whoever you want us to take a look, if you want us to kind of help you through this process at the beginning to show you how it should be done, and then you can kind of compare and contrast past that, great. But these are the things that I would want you to think about and at least look for as you start talking to these other people.
Okay. I mean, so you guys also did that? I'm sorry. This is the first time I've ever heard y'all's show, and I was just driving down the street, and that's why I called you. I just assumed that you guys just did advice through the radio, but you guys actually own your own firm and everything?
We do. We do. So, Thomas, we're the largest independent registered investment advisor firm in the country. We've been around for about 20 years. We provide 401k advice to about 700 companies. 140 of them are in the Fortune 500. All of us at Financial Engines are fiduciaries. So what that means is that we sit on the same side of the table as you. You're not paying more for being in one investment over another or making changes to your plan. So, man, we can totally help you with this. Do this. Get out to investingsense.com. Type in your zip code. We'll get you hooked up, but this is easy stuff here.
So Thomas's call was about inheriting money from his grandparents, but Andy, there's a lot of other baby boomers that are trying to sort out inheritances of another kind.
You're junk.
That's it.
Sorry, it's just stuff, right? 250,000, quarter million of Americans are turning 65 every month. So a lot of people have to clean out all this old junk before they downsize for retirement. It's not just theirs, right? But it's also their elderly parents. Each generation just keeps passing on all this junk to family members. Hey, is this on? Nobody wants your old stuff. Get rid of it now. This is stuff. This is something that you do not want to pass on to somebody else.
I mean, you know, that is the question. What do we hang on to and what do we get rid of? What do we downsize when we're heading into retirement or when an elderly parent passes away? Well, earlier we talked with organization expert Peter Walsh. Peter just wrote a book called Let It Go. He's been featured on Oprah, Larry King, and the show Clean Sweep. He helps people organize and declutter and downsize, and he had great advice for us. Here's what Peter had to say about why junk has so much power over us.
The incredible power that stuff has, that all of our homes, and my family home was no different, every single thing in our home has some kind of power. It has the power to evoke memories. It has the power to take us back to a previous moment. It has the power to recreate either happiness or sadness. And I think the thing is that in letting go of stuff, whether you're downsizing a home yourself or in my case downsizing the family home, I think there's great fear and trepidation in letting go of stuff, because there's this huge fear that in letting go of an item, you will lose the memory or dishonor the memory of a family member. And that power, that emotion is different for every member of the family.
Wow. Memories are so powerful.
Man, I see this all the time with people having these attachments to investments. You know, I can't sell my GE stock because daddy didn't want me to sell it. Well, you know, emotional attachments hold you back. Here's the thing. Your mom and dad didn't want you to have that stock. They wanted you to have an opportunity that they may not have had. So just look at the stock or whatever it is as just a tool and nothing more.
You know, it feels like what we're learning here is that there really is an art to figuring out what's necessary and what's not as you move into retirement. And with that, back to our conversation with Peter, he had this advice.
With the memory items, you need to find what I call the treasures, the best of the best that represent the 10 most significant moments in your life, the best item that represents your relationship, your working life. And there's a whole series of exercises in Let It Go that help you do that. And then with the I might need it one day stuff, all the other practical stuff, you need to downsize to the space you're moving to. I know that sounds obvious, but if you have five closets of clothes and in your new home you only have room for two closets, before you move, you have to get rid of three closets of clothes. You have to do a space audit and sort, downsize, declutter for the space you're moving to, so you don't end up with what so many of my clients have, which is a garage full of boxes that they've moved that will never fit into the space they have.
That was expert organizer and author Peter Walsh. And really, this is all timely because you may want to get a head start and take part of this long Memorial Day weekend and clean out your garage or your basement. Just get the stuff out.
Do it.
And Peter had a lot more great advice. You'll hear our entire conversation, including his advice about how to handle family drama over heirlooms. That's a big one. That's all at investingsense.com. Now, coming up next, we have a feature that started a few weeks ago as a benefit to someone who emailed you, Andy, and it has quickly become one of our most popular features. It is a portfolio review. And Andy, you've turned out to be a really popular guy.
How about that?
We're going to put your endurance to the test. We have two very interesting portfolios for you to review next here on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Get Andy's take on your financial situation. Email askandy at investingsense.com. You can ask him about anything, your IRA, retirement income, or even your current financial advisor. Over 9 million retirement accounts. Learn why we've earned this trust at investingsense.com. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
Earlier in the show, we talked with John Bunch. John is the president of Financial Engines Advisors. And we had a conversation with him about his firsthand accounts of the Bernie Madoff story. It was a really, really powerful conversation filled with great lessons to help you protect yourself from scams like that. You can hear it when you go to investingsense.com. And now, Andy, we're going to move on to what has quickly become one of our most popular features here. It's when you review someone's portfolio. And if you would like to have Andy take a look and review your portfolio, it's so simple. Just email that to askandy at investingsense.com. Put portfolio review in the subject line, and he will get to it here in a future show. And basically what this is Andy takes a process that normally you would be sitting down with a client for about
multiple meetings.
Multiple meetings. The first one, 90 minutes to 2 hours. Here, we're going to give you a snapshot version of what that's like. And Andy, we're going to put your endurance to the test. We have two very interesting portfolio reviews.
I'm ready.
So why don't you give us the details about the first one, Michael and his wife.
All right. So Michael and his wife, substantial income. Savings was pretty good. They did have an emergency fund or do have an emergency fund. Debt is okay. They've got about $100,000 on the house. They want to pay that off in about 3 years. Michael's going to work for about the next 3 to 5 years. His wife wants to work for about the next 5. They've got just over $900,000 in investable assets. They had investments all over the place. He had a Schwab IRA. He had an old 401k, which he needed to roll to an IRA. He had a new 401k, which we needed to help him optimize. His wife had some plans at work, which we needed to help her optimize. His wife had a pension, so we needed to evaluate the pension versus lump sum rollover for her. And then he had this old stock option plan, this old ESOP of about $150,000. So the reason that Michael wanted some help is he had this unique opportunity to invest in a private equity deal. And there was this domino effect that led to all of these other decisions, right? The first of which was how to fund this private equity opportunity. He had to come up with a minimum of about $50,000 to buy into this private equity deal. $50,000 was about 5% of his investable assets. The private equity deal was like, he had to wait 3 years for a dividend play, 5 years for a liquidation event. So what we did was we looked at this concentrated risk in the ESOP, which was about 15% of his overall wealth. So we actually used the ESOP to fund the private equity deal. Yes, he had to pay taxes to withdraw and put into the private equity, but he had seen substantial gains in the ESOP. It's just kind of like you got to be this high to ride the ride. It's the price of admission, right? So we moved the remainder of the ESOP and the old 401k to a Schwab IRA. We helped him manage the Schwab IRA and give him some help on that new 401k now. Michael and his wife promised to increase their maximum contributions to their 401k, that whole save as much as you can for as long as you can. So they're both saving $24,000 right now. And we ran the time value of money calculations on this for him, and it really surprised him with the results, how much he was able to really do, with kind of this trophy dash here towards retirement. A couple other things suggested that they make a 13th or a 14th mortgage payment each year. For the wife's pension, still TBD on the rollover versus the annuity payment, but we're going to know a little bit more later on that. But all of this kind of centers around this seemingly controversial early withdrawal from the ESOP. you know, people clutching their pearls. Oh my gosh, I can't believe that you paid taxes to get money out. But he had to reduce the concentration risk in the ESOP anyway. So we saw the gains in the ESOP. It effectively paid for the, you know, it paid for this tax event to diversify him, jump into the next PE deal. So we consolidated and simplified their financial lives. We used this upside potential in private equity. Plus, the thing is that Michael didn't feel like, you know, he missed out on something. Like, if he didn't take advantage of this, he was going to kick himself forever. So I encourage you to go see an advisor. But this is kind of the framework of what I'm looking at here, just right at the start.
It's a really, really interesting review. So Andy is going through portfolio reviews. And from Michael and his wife, Andy, next, it's another pretty specialized review that only has TSP funds, and that's Thrift Savings Plan. It's 401k for a federal government employee, and this portfolio comes from Jay in Memphis. He writes that he's 61. I contribute the max to my TSP, and my allocation is 15% G fund, 50% F fund, 25% C fund, and then finally 10% in the S fund.
Boy, lots of consonants there. Let me kind of tell you what's going on here. So the G fund within the TSP, Thrift Savings Plan for government federal employees, G fund is U.S. Treasuries. F fund tracks the total bond market. C fund tracks the S&P 500, so think large cap stocks. S fund tracks mid cap, small cap stocks. One that he did not mention was the I fund, and that invests in international stocks. So the great thing about TSPs is that they use index funds. Very low cost, very kind of quick, you know, exposure to a broad market. I like the fact that he is spreading, his money across four different asset classes. So with the numbers that I see here, he's got about 65% in bonds, 35% in stocks. What did Jay say his risk tolerance was?
He has here on a scale from 1 to 10, where 10 is the highest risk. Jay says he's about a 6.
So he's a 6. So a little bit of a problem here. So, Jay, if your risk tolerance is a 6, your allocation is a lot less than that, maybe like a 3 or 4 on a 1 to 10 risk scale. So your allocation is actually too conservative. I would worry, and I would want you to worry, about being able to keep pace with inflation, probably outliving your savings. So what I would do is just flip that, right? So instead of 65% bonds, 35% stocks, you'd have 65% stocks, 35% bonds. In that 35% bonds, maybe go 20% of the account to F, total bond market, 15% to G, those government bonds. On the stock side, 30% in that C fund, S&P 500, the 15% to S, right, for small company stocks. For the remainder, that 20%, that's what you're missing, that international piece. So I encourage you to go see an advisor. I would look at that iFund from there. The thing is that you almost everybody needs to increase diversification. They just don't know it. In Jay's case, the allocation aligned with a risk tolerance that was much lower than where he said he needed to be. So you need to kind of change that as well. Over time, you're going to take some stocks, move it over to bonds as you near you know, your retirement date, but you have to understand kind of what's going on here within the allocation. I will say that we work with a lot of veterans. They have a lot of unique planning situations. Early pensions are possible. So you put in your full 20, you could retire at 38, then what, right? They have different healthcare planning issues. There could be medical issues to manage. We know what these moving pieces are and have to help people through this all week long. So, Jay, we put up some TSP resources for you at investingsense.com, really everybody, right? So investingsense.com, go check this out. So if you have a TSP, I would highly recommend that you read this recent fund information report. You can look under page one for all of the different allocation targets. But get there, investingsense.com, and you can see probably what you should be doing here a little bit differently.
So you just heard Andy review two different, completely different portfolios. And good job, by the way. I knew you had the endurance to do too.
Thank you very much, Bob.
And he would love to take a look at yours. So send those to askandy@investingsense.com and just put portfolio review in the subject line. And now back to answering your questions at 888-833-8637 or the email, again, askandy@investingsense.com. And Andy, we have an email from another Jay.
Another Jay.
And this Jay writes, can I withdraw from my IRA for a child's college expenses without being penalized on taxes? Jay writes, he received notice from the IRS that he owes for withdrawing from his 401k to pay for his daughter's college expenses, and he was under the impression that if it was used for this, he would not be penalized. So, Jay, thanks for listening to the show. Andy, what's your advice for Jay?
Jay, you are correct. If you think you owe taxes, you probably have to pay taxes, but there's an exception here. So in your case, you can't avoid taxes, but you can avoid a penalty, that 10% early withdrawal penalty. So if you use the money for, quote, qualified educational expenses, you're not going to have to pay that 10% early withdrawal penalty. Some qualified educational expenses would be things like tuition, books. So if you think you qualify, what I want you to do is look up Form 5329, so IRS.gov. Look for Form 5329, and you're going to use that to show why you are not subject to a 10% withdrawal penalty. Couple of things here. Number one, you know, if you're saving for college, you need to build these intermediate term expenses into your long-term plan. You think about needs and wants and wishes. You need to have retirement income. You want to be able to send your kid to school. So if you build that in soon enough, you can figure out what other instructions you need to follow so that you can save all the way through. So that's number one. Number two, we put the rules for these exceptions on the 10% penalty, including the educational expenses that Jay was talking about, at investingsense.com. So get there. I don't care if your name is Jay or something else. Investingsense.com, you can see these exceptions because this could save you some big money here going forward.
Andy, I have an interesting twist on Jay's question. I just became a grandfather recently.
That's right.
So can a grandparent withdraw from their IRA to pay for a grandchild's educational expenses without that 10% penalty?
Well, it's going to be qualified educational expenses. What I would do, though, is pay the amount directly to the school so that the child's not going to be subject to any gift tax. It's a very simple way to pay for your grandkids' college when you go directly to the institution.
So with Memorial Day weekend, you have a little bit more time to think about your investing and your retirement goals, and we are here to help. We have plenty of time to continue to answer your questions at AskAndy at InvestingSense.com or call us at 888-833-8637. Here on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Want to know how your portfolio stacks up? Get Andy's take on the good, the bad, and everything in between. Just email your portfolio to AskAndy at InvestingSense.com. Do you have the expertise of 30 PhDs and CFA charter holders backing your financial plan? We do. Go to InvestingSense.com to find one of our Financial Engine advisors in your area. And now, back to Investing Sense with Bob Richards and nationally recognized certified financial planner, Andy Smith.
We are going to get right back to work answering your questions at AskAndy at InvestingSense.com. That's AskAndy at InvestingSense, S-E-N-S-E.com. Or give us a call at 888-833-8637. And Joe is calling from Albany. Joe, fire away with your question.
Just was wondering, I have a single, rather large stock position in one company. It's about 8,300 shares of a stock, and I'm getting pressure from several advisors, you know, to sell and diversify, and I was wondering if, you know, I get a decent dividend, and I was wondering if it's something I should really take a look at.
Okay. How much percentage-wise does this investment make up of your overall portfolio?
Well, unfortunately, pretty substantial. I'd say at least 70%.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a couple of things to think about. I mean, 70%, that's a huge, huge piece for any investment. I mean, I'll give you a couple of options. You can sell it outright. That probably isn't the best thing to do from a tax perspective. But you can just, you know, sell it and diversify in other investments that you have access to. You could sell down to your basis.
Explain that just a second. What do you mean sell down to your basis?
All right. So you have a certain amount of money in the position. Let's say that it's X. And it's valued at Y right now. Well, you sell down to X, basically making it a free trade. And so, yes, you have gains. Oh, I should ask, is this in a taxable or a non-taxable account?
I'm no longer with the company, so it's just a freestanding stock. So it would be taxable if I sell.
Okay. So, you know, going back to that, you know, selling back to your basis, or, you know, the whole free trade concept, you value, you know, the cost is X, what it costs you to get into it. It's valued at Y. That difference, you sell, yeah, you pay some gains, but you still have the position, but then you take those gains and you can do other things with it. The other thing that you could do is just, you know, keep the stock, make sure that it's no more than about 10% at most, maybe 15% of your overall wealth. Well, then you take those dollars and you diversify into different things. The big thing for you to remember here is that you've got a lot of tax questions that have to be answered. Now, I don't want you to let the tax tail wag the dog here. Never make a decision based solely on taxes, because there's a lot of other things that go into this.
So, Andy, in a situation like Joe's, and you're looking at the layers of complexity, what layer does his age add to that when it comes to considering all of the different options that you mentioned?
Well, Joe, how old are you?
54.
54. All right. So are you still working?
Currently, yes. I'm self-employed.
You're self-employed. Okay. So age has some things to do with it, because the younger that you are, the more time you have to kind of rebound from a large tax hit or any potential tax burden, the older that you are, the less time that you have. But the older that you are, and I'm not saying that you're old, but I'm saying as you go on, you have less time to recover from either indecision or bad decisions. And so I'd say you're kind of at that break point here in terms of, boy, if you can figure out what you want your plan to be going forward, as long as you adjust for taxes and any tax burden that you have, I think that you're going to be much better positioned in a better diversified investment portfolio. If you want to stay with the stock, stay with the stock, but don't stay with it forever, because you basically have a single point of success and a single point of failure with this one investment. That's what you don't want in any investment portfolio. So find a way to remove that single point of success and failure as you still stay invested, and I think you're going to be okay.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, something to think about. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You know, Bob, here's the situation. Joe was or is taking a lot of risk in one stock. Sometimes it pays off, right? Jeff Bezos would say it pays off with his Amazon holding.
Well, Amazon recently in the Wall Street Journal said that a $10,000 investment in Amazon.com in 1997 worth $4.9 million today.
That's nice.
And by the way, the chart of that growth, just for fun, we put it up at investingsense.com.
So Bezos, right? Huge, huge money. I'm just fascinated by the history of billionaires. Maybe not the billionaires themselves, but the history. You got guys like Rockefeller, Carnegie, Vanderbilt. Quick question. Who was the wealthiest person ever in the history of the world?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I would say one of those that you just listed.
Jacob Fugger. Oh, my gosh, Bob. You are amazing.
Who is Jacob Fugger?
You knew that. That's totally changed everything else. So this guy was Jacob Fugger is his name. He was essentially a German bank back in the 1500s, estimated to have $400 billion. Dollars adjusted for today's inflation. He financed kings and explorers and popes. This guy had seven steps that he followed to acquire his billions. We're going to post all seven, or have posted all seven, at investingsense.com, and you can look and follow. But there were a couple that stood out to me that were especially appropriate in today's time. Number one, invest when others are fearful. Have some cash reserves. When stocks drop, hit the bid. There's tons of stuff going on. And that kind of ties into the second one, to keep your cool. Never mix your emotions with money. We saw that during the election. We're seeing that now with all of these just horrible stories coming at us in the news. You have to separate your emotions from your money and really have a plan going forward so that you know exactly what you need to do at each and every step along the way. Might not get to $400 billion, but you could have a heck of a lot more going forward than you would have if you didn't keep your cool, if you didn't educate yourself, if you, you know, only invested when you felt great about the market. But investingsense.com, you can see Jacob Fugger's seven steps to, it's like a self-help book, seven steps to $400 billion, but we posted it there, investingsense.com.
And the other resources that you'll find at investingsense.com, you can hear our conversation again that we had with John Bunch about the Bernie Madoff scandal, our conversation with expert organizer Peter Walsh. Also, we have the really valuable TSP resources there. So as we wrap up the show, we'd like to take a second and remember the real reason for Memorial Day, and that's remembering and honoring those veterans who lost their lives during their service to our country. Thanks to those men and women and their families. For Andy Smith, I'm Bob Richards. We hope you have a wonderful long Memorial Day weekend. And you join us here next weekend on Investing Sense, brought to you by Financial Engines.
Investing Sense is brought to you by Financial Engines and is sponsored by its advisor centers throughout the United States, including your local advisor center. The Financial Engines advisor centers provide investment advisory services to their clients using research and analysis performed by its research team. Investment advice provided to each advisor center serves the needs of each individual client and may or may not include funds mentioned in today's broadcast. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation of any fund or investment product and should carefully evaluate any investment before investing. The advisor centers do not provide tax or legal advice. Consult a tax professional or lawyer for help with tax and legal matters. Individuals who invest with their local Financial Engines advisor center will incur management fees but not loads, in addition to the management fees and other expenses charged by the fund companies. We have discussed no load mutual funds and exchange traded funds during this broadcast. The research team's recommendations may include load waived funds that are only available through certain trading platforms. Mutual funds and exchange traded funds, like other investments, have a risk of loss. Term insurance products, as referenced on the show, are offered through TMFS Insurance Agency, LLC, an affiliate of Financial Engines in states where licensed. TMFS Insurance Agency, LLC, is under common ownership with Financial Engines. Please visit financialengines.com for additional information.